Welcome to another edition of The Fishing School. Let's get it started with a little bit of flavor. This week, I'm going to talk about taking it way back to the basics, taking it way back to the essentials, all the way back to when our founding fathers were fishing. And the premise for the show is the fact that anybody from the colonies could outfish you today. With the gear that they have, they would catch more fish than many of you listening to the show. They'd think your tackle box was amusing or odd and that, and then they'd sit down and get to business, and they would use some quite effective fishing gear. So, in several hundred years, as a fishing community, we have an advance. So that's the premise for today's show. So we're going to talk about one founding father specifically, who kind of, shucked the role of being upper class. And that is one of our most first presidents, George Washington. So we'll be talking a little revolution today on the showgram, and we'll have a revolutionary flavor. So let's get it started, shall we?
Come join hand in hand, brave Americans all, and rouse your bold hearts that for liberty's call. No tyrannous act shall suppress your just claim, or stain with dishonor America's name. In freedom we're born, and in freedom we live. Our purses are ready. Steady, boys, steady. Not as slaves, but as free men, our money will give. Our worthy forefathers, let's give them a cheer, who climates unknown did courageously steer. Through oceans, through deserts, for freedom they came, and dying bequeath us their freedom and fame. In freedom we're born, and in freedom we live. Our purses are ready. Steady, boys, steady, not a slave.
Ready, and fire.
Well, I did study with Dr. Errol von Stroessenberger, Bacon.
Who?
Oh, you don't know him? Oh, he's like one of the leading leaders in unusual methods. Actually, he's how I was appointed to the Presidential Council for Experimental Education.
Read between the lines!
Because they're thirsty!
Fishing School. You can call our studio showgram hotline, 347-994-3267. That's 347-994-3267. Ask your fishing question and ye shall receive. Receive it by information via the web.
I would like to tell you about what we've been doing in here, but there's such a thing as teacher-student confidentiality, and I don't want to be in breach of education law because I could be dismembered by the teachers' union.
No dismemberment today. We'll be talking revolutionary fishing, and this is going to revolutionize your fish catching. So let's get back to basics today. Let's see how George Washington did it way back around the turn of the 19th century. Come on, people.
Get out there and melt some faces!
What type of talk is this? This melt of faces that one speaks of? Let's get revolutionary. And this show is all about thinking completely different. So we're going to completely think handmade. We're going to think natural items. We're going to think about forged, steeled, hammered hooks. Okay? And if you want to get a glimpse of what I'm talking about, I did do a post, and you can see that right now, as opposed to in the past when I said I'd get stuff up. Well, it's up! Okay, using the technology of Revolutionary America, I've posted to the blog site, chicagofishingschool.com, chicagofishingschool.com. Go down to the first post in the center of the page left, and you should see George Washington's hook. Either the exact hook or the most similar hook that the Mount Vernon people could find at the Mount Vernon Museum. That's where this replica, or this relic, resides. And you can find an entire kit, George Washington's entire fishing kit there, and you'll see a picture of that. In fact, let me doodle right on over to there, so I'll use my web machine. What is this web machine of which you speak? ChicagoFishingSchool.com. And let's take a look at this. There's also a secret clue left by Congress. After many years, after our first president, they finally were able to create the Washington Monument. And we here in our ChicagoFishingSchool.com labs have uncovered some secrets about early American fishing, and maybe these are kind of like hidden Masonic symbols that you can discover on your own. So check it out. It says George Washington Live Bait Angler. And you'll see a hammered iron hook that George might have used for larger fish, like a, let's say, a halibut or something in the ocean or something in the river that runs right past his estate in Mount Vernon. So you can view that. Also, you can see how we've uncovered a secret of the Washington Monument, and you'll see clues that even way back when our founding fathers knew what was essential fishing gear, and you'll see that. We have kind of done a little forensic overlay there, so take a look at that and see what you think about that and discover what you've been missing. Okay, so the bottom line here is you'll take a look at George Washington's fishing kit. And for those of you who don't have a computer, I think it would be nearly nobody. But it is revolutionary time, and the computer has not yet been invented. So I will describe it for you so that you might see it. All right, I'm thinking we were hot, but the studio technical difficulties, despite our leap in time here, we always run into a little bit of technical. Well, so we're back. So I will repeat just in case the network has lost the signal, but we've uncovered secrets that have been buried for hundreds of years, and I bring them to you via the internet, the web. And kind of a miracle sent from God, the ability to stream audio from one place to another and store it and then call it up. It is the Shogram. I don't think it's that much of a miracle. But okay, so let's get back to George Washington's fishing kit. You can see that one of the great anglers of American times, all that he required to catch fish could be placed in the palm of his hand. So take a look, jump over to the site and take a look for that, and you'll read about a whole article on the basis for the entire show. But what you need to know is that he's a very busy man and that he traveled. So kind of like modern times, George Washington didn't have the luxury of a lot of time. The guy had his a lot of irons in many different fires across the region on the East Coast there. So for him, unlike noble or royalty or, you know, the English, he was very much opposite in English. He served in the Continental Army under English generals. And by the way, we got to put a disclaimer out. I am not a scholar or a historian, so we'll have to use the Fox Facts Checker at the end of the show and see how many times I've stepped in the bucket and gotten things wrong. But I will try and deliver you historically accurate information from my research, but then know that if I don't do it justice, well, we'll go back and maybe try and catch a couple of those. If you find errors in the stories today, send an email, drop an email to radio@ChicagoFishingSchool.com. And also, if you have any other communication you want to send it to me, you can drop an email to radio@ChicagoFishingSchool.com, and I will do my best to get back to you in a quick and swift fashion. I know that this show predates the Pony Express, I believe. It's before the post office. It is before the Wells Fargo. So how I will get the message to you, I don't know. But maybe we'll try and we'll leap into the future immediately following this show, and I will deliver you an answer via email. But note that I think in the future a thing called spam will be spam blocker will be invented, and your message might not make it through. So if it doesn't, I'm sorry. I will actually post. You can post comments up on ChicagoFishingSchool.com much better than an email, because then everyone can share in your comments. So if you see an article and it's similar to the content that you want to talk about, go ahead and post a comment in there or post it in the blog, and I'll find a good home for it. And by the way, in the future, there's a thing called a blog. Okay, so George Washington did a lot of traveling. In fact, some of his possessions were a great deal of camping equipment so that he could travel and pitch a base camp and then head on to his destination. So he did not live in Washington, D.C. As that much. And the thing like the White House actually wasn't totally invented. It wasn't completed, obviously, when they had their first president. So they had this is where I need to be historically accurate. He stayed on the Capitol Hill, but Congress was held, and He would then travel back and forth when possible, and he had, like I said, a lot of irons in the fire. So he was also in, well, I believe, in the government in Virginia. Now, this is all during British control and British rule, okay? So there was still a government in place. It just wasn't America. And so he was part of that portion of Virginia government, and that's where he spent a lot of time traveling between there and Mount Vernon. And during his travels, occasionally he would be able to fish in the Potomac, where he lived off of Mount Vernon. It says that he had access to ample supplies of spring shad, herring, bass, carp, and sturgeon. So I believe we all know George Washington had poor teeth, had many problems with teeth. In fact, at the end of his life, he had lost all of his teeth. And the wooden dentures thing is not true at all, but he had a set of dentures, and he was constantly at the dentist, so in a lot of pain. So I believe that fishing represented peace and freedom for him. So good things worth fighting for are being able to catch your own fish. Well, one of the things that he really liked, and with bad teeth, obviously, he wouldn't be a big fan of chewing a steak, right? So with really poor teeth and sore jaw and that, one thing that he came to really like was salted preserved fish. So he actually, you know, some of the things that he's not known for are farming, which later, you know, once we did our research on that, he had a very large farm. He had 200 to 300 people working for him, including slaves and freemen. And the farm itself was a lot of revenue. Some of the things that he made money on later in life was a distillery. So he was making liquor and alcohol and distributing that. But early on, he had a fish business, and he would preserve the fish and make salted fish. Well, one of the ingredients he would need would come from the Caribbean. So the salt that came in from the Caribbean and that was premium salt. It was the best for preserving, and the product was the best. So it was better than English salt, but as tariffs and taxes began to stack up, his salt was in fact taxed, and so he could buy the less favorable English salt versus the salt that he wanted. With the tariffs and taxes on his salt and his business, George Washington left the Continental Army and then started to begin to form the revolution. So we think that the revolution is in fact based on the fact that one of his part of his business was being taken away and his freedom. So it's just symbolic of a man losing something and wanting to fight for it. So he kind of saw into the future, and he thought, you know, these salt taxes keep continuing to rise. Well, I need to do something about it. So there are stories that even when he would visit places, they knew how fond he was of the salted fish. So let me read a little bit from it's a 1936 issue of American Cookery magazine. That George Washington had a fondness for fish is well known. From his own estate bordering the Potomac, he had an ample supply of spring shad, herring, bass, carp, and sturgeon. And that fish appeared often on the table of the Washington family is borne out by the fact that Benson J. Lossing, in his Mary and Martha Washington, mentions a breakfast guest who later commented on the absence of broiled fish from the menu, as is the general custom. Then George Washington came to England, home of the salt fish dinner. As commander of the Continental Army, he lived in Cambridge, where Harvard students were demanding salt fish in preference to fresh fish in the college dormitories. As president, he made triumphal visit to New Hampshire and was royally entertained in Portsmouth. In that most interesting chronicle of his visit, George Washington in New Hampshire, the author Judge Elwin L. Page referred to a dinner in his house at Brewster's Tavern, says, "One would like to know what was the table talk, but neither Washington nor any of his guests has left a trace of it. He might be reasonably certain, however, that an important part of the bill of fare was codfish, not prepared in the present-day fashion, but in the form that then known as dumb fish. The superior spring catch of fish was used for this dish. The fish were first salted and then dried, then kept alternatively above and below ground until thoroughly mellowed. The restaurant dumb fish, when boiled, was in color red and was served on Saturdays at the best tables in New England. After these New England visits, Washington retained his fondness for this particular kind of dinner. His friends knew of it, and Peter Leicester Ford, in his True George Washington, tells of the concern of Richard Varick, who wrote to a friend requesting the loan enough salt codfish to entertain Washington at dinner because of his own supply had been delayed in arrival. When Washington himself entertained no less distinguished guests than Archibald Robertson, I mean, he's pretty distinguished, the Scottish artist who came to this country to present to him a box of celebrated oak tree which sheltered Sir William Wallace after the Battle of Falkirk. The dinner was served at 3 o'clock. Being on Saturday, the first course was most certainly Eastern cod and fresh fish. At this point, Tobias Lear enters the story. He lived in Portsmouth, and after he graduated from Harvard, became private secretary to Washington. Among other duties, he kept the household accounts, and recently, when these were found in an old trunk inherited by Stephen Decatur Jr., he published them as part of Private Affairs of George Washington. Here he read, salt codfish was one of the staple articles of food of the age and was looked upon almost as a necessity. Washington was extremely fond of fish, and knowing this, the New England members of Congress usually kept him supplied with cod. He regularly dined on Saturday on a salt fish dinner consisting of boiled beets, potatoes, onions, mixed with boiled fish and covered with pork scraps and egg sauce. Okay, so there you go. That is what the man loved. So I have another fish story for you. Oh, we'll take a short break here, and we will we'll get back to our tales of freedom and the essential gear of fishing. I will get you to the essential secrets of fishing, and so that you can think in a revolutionary manner like George Washington, and that you will catch tons and tons of fish by doing so. So stay tuned, and we will we'll have much more to come on the showground.
Hey, this is Johnny Wilkins, and I'm going to tell you about a great fishing website where you can get the same tackle that I use when I'm out on the water. That's livebaitfishingtackle.com. Talk about great stuff. This stuff is field tested and proven. No junk, only fish catching tackle. So find the latest, the 2013 selection of float fishing accessories, tools, and equipment that'll help you catch a ton of fish, including the float that's caught me 203 fish in 30 minutes. That's right. If you're not catching fish, you got to switch. Switch to livebaitfishingtackle.com. Try some new floats. If you have any questions, feel free to email me, and I'll send you a diagram or help you out as much as I can on the showgram. So use the stuff that I talk about on the show and improve your fishing. Livebaitfishingtackle.com. And hey, the prices are great. Why? They catch a ton of fish. Check it out.
Regard it as somewhat strange if we should require a codfish aristocracy to keep us in order. Quote about how much George Washington loved fish. Everybody grab a musket and some fresh powder. Going to fishing war. We're going to get, it's fishing war against bad fishing. That's what this show's about. So next time you get the urge to grab like a shiny package off the shelf or if you're in a big box store, think about the fights and drums. Think about how fishing has gone bonkers. We're a couple hundred years off track. Shows to get you back into fish. Promise. I'll beat it into you. Alright. So most biographers of George Washington's life mentioned that he played a pointed particularly athletics.
He did not give up these activities in his later years, but only limited them as his aging body required. He was known as one of the greatest horsemen in the colonies, and his fondness for fox hunting bordered on being a passion. But no one has pointed out that he was an ardent fisherman. We're pointing it out here today. Buried in various musty archives is a record of his interest. Few will dispute that there would be no United States of America without Washington. Duty was always first for the father of our country, but he was still a man and loved his diversions. As president of the 1787 Federal Convention in Philadelphia, he presided over one of the greatest collection of minds ever assembled. That duty had to be extremely difficult. After 2 months, a special committee of detail was created to prepare and report the results of the deliberation in the form of a constitution. The convention then adjourned on Thursday, July 26th to reassemble on Monday, August 6th. It was reported that the Philadelphia newspapers that on July 30th, 1787, Washington went to Valley Forge to visit his former headquarters. He stayed at Moore Hall, which was the mansion owned by the late William Moore, 3 miles from Valley Forge. But visiting his old haunts was not his only objective. In his own words taken from his diary, George Washington wrote, "Monday, 30th July, in company with Mr. Govern Morris, went into the neighborhood of Valley Forge to Widow Moore's a-fishing at whose house we lodged." Another entry, "Tuesday, 31st July, before breakfast, I rode into Valley Forge and over the whole cantonment and works of the American Army in winter of 1777-1778, and on my return to the Widow Moore's, found Mr. and Mrs. Rob Morris, spent the day there fishing and lodged at the same place. Wednesday, August 1st, returned ab 11 o'clock with the above company to Philadelphia. Friday, August 3rd, 1787, went to Trenton on a fishing party with Mr. and Mrs. Rob Morris and Mr. Gov Morris, dined and lodged at Colonel Sam Ogden's in the evening, fished. During his presidential tour of New England in 1789, Washington traveled as far north as Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Viewing the Atlantic Ocean was too much to resist. In a small boat, President Washington tried his hand at saltwater fishing. The entry in his diary read, "On Monday, November 2nd, 1787, having lines, we proceed to the fishing banks, a little without the harbor, and fished for cod. But in no being proper time of tide, we only caught two, with which, about 1 o'clock, we returned to town." So he said we, he's pretty modest. And legend has it that he, in fact, did catch one of the cod. When the President of the United States was here, instead of wetting the seas of the Doge of Venice does, as the Doge of Venice does, he said to have received a tribute from it, for I am informed he caught a codfish himself when indulging in one of these parties. During his presidency, a dispute arose between Secretary of State Thomas Jefferson and Secretary of Treasury Alexander Hamilton. President Washington took the two on a fishing trip on the Delaware River. He refused to row them ashore until they resolved their differences. It worked, at least temporarily. A fishing trip, a delightful political ploy. I guess he figured they'd be so stubborn that he'd get a nice little time of fishing in, but solve it in the center of the river where they can't escape, right? One cannot help but wonder how many fishing trips George Washington made before the war, during the war, and while in office, let alone after he retired, that were not recorded. Was the lack of details as to the number of the size of fish caught the result? Not catching any, or was telling fish stories taboo in the 18th century? This is an article from Revolutionary War Archives, Sons of Liberty chapter. So, pretty cool website. That's revolutionarywararchives.org, and you'll see Washington fishing there. It's a great article. I think that we don't hear many more tales of his fishing because he didn't, it wasn't thought of as presidential or, like I said, upper class. It was kind of frowned upon. Upper class frown upon things, and this is one of them. So a live bait fisherman is not something that's going to make the press, okay? So thus you're stuck with it. It's a fact that George Washington was a coarse fisherman and not a fly fisherman. So let me see. There's another quote here. Okay, let's see. A colonial angler, George Washington, or some nameless urchin living with parents along a creek and the mountain man next century following in the footsteps of Lewis and Clark, had eventually the same motivation and used much the same approach as we do today. That's not true. So there's several books. We have actually read from The Complete Angler. That's Walton's book written in 1653. And I imagine that one of these books or similar book like this. Thomas Barker's The Art of Angling, 1651. And like I said, Isaac Walton wrote a book, The Complete Angler, in 1653. I think that probably one of these had to make it into the hands of Washington. And these books talk about catching fish and the art of luring in and catching fish. And we know that George Washington loved to eat fish. It's one of his favorite things. And like I said, the quote is, "We should regard it as somewhat strange if we should require a codfish aristocracy to keep us in order." And that's somebody complaining about the fact that George Washington is always given fish whenever he's at a state function. So people knew it, and they had to have the salted fish on hand. So the guy loved fish. So, and he also loved to catch fish. So for him to grab a fly rod and to have artificial time on the water wasn't the deal. He wanted to get right to the chase. He wanted to catch fish, come up with a catch, and have a meal. So it was known that he, on several occasions, his favorite thing to do with people was to catch fish, prepare a meal, and then eat what he caught. So the guy was very innovative in his own land with what he grew on his farm and different crops and that. He traded tobacco across to England, and there's a lot of diary entries. He was meticulous in entering anything that he purchased and keeping track. So the logs are very accurate as to what he purchased. And the things that he would purchase included, you know, hooks from England and hooks and line from England and lines made of horsehair would usually make up the main line. So that's your thicker line. And then silk lines would make up the leader line. So these are very strong, thick lines, and then obviously the hooks were not like we have today, but they were instead hammered iron hooks. So you can see they're called spade end hooks, and a spade end hook has no eye on it, but that these are hammered flat, and the line is essentially tied to the shank of the hook, and it can't pass through because the hook is hammered or spade, or it's a flattened little, like a little miniature shovel at the end of the hook. And so that's essentially what he would have. He would have a few links of this, and then that was carried in a tin. So it was very easy to carry and transport, and anywhere he would go, he would just find suitable branches in that to fish or use a hand line in some occasions. So he would just fish with the most essential of gear. And that's what I need you guys to think about, is getting down to the basics. So fishing is not buying a bunch of flashy packaging, and fishing is not having a trillion colors of the same lure, and that fishing is catching fish. And George Washington's fishing kit, which you can see, like I said, over at ChicagoFishingSchool.com, shows as a fisherman how getting back to basics can really catch you a ton of fish. So he's kind of a hero of our show, Graham, and mine personally, in that he was a coarse fisherman, live bait angler, and the fact that the man, his tackle box was basically the size of a shoe polish, a can of shoe polish. So there's a lesson to be learned from our founding father. Gear up for success with line, hook, weight, and float. Real tackle box, piles of lures, different colors, electronics, and even boats can get in the way of the goal to catch fish. We need to keep it simple and keep it small and get to the edge of the water and fish. Practice fishing near your home and you will learn. Wait to fish until you can travel a great distance and you will learn nothing but places to stop along the road. Drive less and fish more. Remember, Washington didn't have a car and he fished near home. His Mount Vernon property is located near shad and perch and trout grounds. Along with hunting and farming, learn from your ancestor. You know, catch fish. That's what it's all about. So there are lots of books about George Washington and his fishing. And they're all pieced together, like I said, from different diary entries and different logs of what he has purchased. So you're going to have to do a little bit of research, but it's a lot of fun. And like some of the music that we had running on the show, this is all good stuff from back then.
Come join hand in hand, brave Americans all, and rouse your bold hearts at liberty's call.
Internet. But actually, I've got a great friend who is a cool. So if you really dig the harpsichord, VINIKUR, the Dory VINIKUR.com. Stop, guys. I'm Grammy. Here. Basically, the Eddie Van. The American colonists. The instruments that they had. How about that? Okay, so the basics you need to know here is that one of our most successful anglers of all time took really horrible line, much worse than you have available to you, and took hammered steel hooks, which are much heavier than you have available to you. So strike two for the modern equipment, or I'm sorry, strike two for the revolutionary or the colonist equipment. George Washington's equipment would be heavy compared to modern standards. But looking in most people's tackle boxes and looking at the kits available that I see when I'm out teaching, nobody's learned this lesson. Nobody has picked up on this fact. So based on that, I know that most of you, if you went and dug into your tackle boxes, you would find that you have heavier hooks and that the advantage is, in fact, erased. So General George Washington would be even a little closer to a level playing field. His line would be thicker. His leader would be thicker. But again, I see the type of line that people bring when they come to fishing lessons. So I can tell you that America fishes far too heavy. So again, another advantage that we'd have as a modern angler erased, because most people have 8-pound, 6-pound line, or 10-pound or worse. They have very thick, thick line. And this doesn't offer any assistance. So George Washington, if he were to fish right next to you, again, you are not taking advantage of what is available to you. So that is a nice, supple 3-pound main line tied to a 2-pound leader, or a nice, flexible, maybe 4 or 5-pound main line tied to a 3-pound leader. And that's for monster fish. That's for 10, 12-pound fish. Okay? We as anglers, we have reels. George Washington could have had a reel. There were reels available at the time, but mostly his kit doesn't imply that he used a reel. He could have, but most of the time, I believe he was using just a pole or a branch. So a branch fashioned with his coarse fishing equipment, and he would have his way with the fish and catch enough to feed, I believe, himself and his guests around him, and that was a good day for him. So you, as the modern American angler, you need to use what you have as an advantage. So we have much better poles available to us. We have longer poles. And again, I would say that if you showed up and you were going to fish again in a contest against President George Washington or General George, you would show up and he would have a longer pole than you, even though it was made out of a tree branch or made out of bamboo. His pole would be longer than you. Again, advantage George Washington. Within his kit, if you take a look at the ChicagoFishingSchool.com website, you'll see inside that kit, you will see he has an assortment of hook sizes. And he was smart enough to know that the hook size mattered. Okay, in fact, on the post itself is a cutout of one of the iron hooks that he used. Now, that one is a large hook. I have a sample kit of some of these hooks, and I did purchase some hooks. I need to do that at regular size is what I need to do. So if you look at it on the web page, let's see, just click at the blog on the blog post on ChicagoFishingSchool.com, and you open that, crack it open. The actual size is about is what is posted on the page. That's pretty close to actual size. So you can see that the hooks in there are still kind of small, even though they were hand hammered and iron. So big advantage versus modern hooks for George Washington. And that's just shameful. So somebody made those by hand as opposed to a steel or manufactured hook with laser, etc. All the advancements we have. And yet, when I look in people's tackle boxes, I see these giant hooks. So the only thing that you would have going for you is that he would have a braided line and then you have a silk braided leader. Other than that, you're going to be pretty much sunk when it comes to fishing against George Washington. The longer pole and the better hooks, on average, he's going to have better hooks than many of you listening. And when I speak about better hooks, I talk many times about a fine wire hook. And that's based upon its size being stealthy and based upon its weight being physically easier for fish to ingest, and making it easier for fish to eat is the name of the game. So based on that fact, most people listening to broadcasts would lose to General George Washington. His longer pole would afford him total control over the bait. And in many situations, controlling that bait horizontally is the key. So it's a little bit of history and a little bit of fishing embarrassment for modern anglers, the fact that somebody from the colonies could outfish us. So just think about that the next time you're going to pick out some tackle. And I want you to think, keeping it simple, okay? The other thing that I don't see in the fishing kit, and there's a couple of different drawings in that, I don't see weight. So I'm believing from what I see, and again, we're at the mercy of historians and people that have archived this, but I don't see weights, which would indicate to me that George Washington used only the bait and a hook. thus making his setup a lot lighter than what people deliver to the water. So let me take a look. There's one thing, one place I wanted to look, and I'm certain that I didn't see any weights available. If they were to use weights, it would most likely be a lead wrap. Weights back then were not like split shot as we would know them, but they would be like a lead foil that would be used to weight their rigs. I do not see any. I don't see any weights in the fishing kit. So, essentially, he would be delivering this to the water and using the hook itself as the weight for the fishing kit. So his fishing kit came with several different hook sizes, and like I said, about half of them are going to be smaller than what you have in your tackle box. So do take a lesson from our revolutionary friends. And, try and down the road. So take a look and get out there and do some research. Scour for me and figure out what else you can add to this conversation. So I do often answer people's emails as I receive them. So I noticed that more people were downloading the showgram, and I'd love to hear from you, the audience. Talk about what you're fishing, what you're catching. George Washington fished for perch. And he fished for shad and herring. These are all in the smaller fish, members of the smaller fish, species. So he was obviously adept at catching his meal. And I think the smaller fish he found, he didn't have to fillet them, could salt them, and they were easier to process and probably tastier. So they talk about premium fishes and that. And like we learned about on our Dan Gapin interview from last week, it is not about a specific species or catching the one largest fish. It's about what you catch. So last week, I was pretty proud to get out on the water and teach a few people. And I caught 200 fish in the setting. I had a few distractions and some people that came by. In fact, I got a bunch of audio that I need to cut up for next week's showgram, and that is a family group that ascended upon me. And when we're talking about fishing colonial style and improving your gear and having the chance to improve your gear with modern equipment, we'll take a look at the audio clips, and I'll cut out some key pieces. But it was a family, three different generations of anglers who came to the water, and they were so loud that it was entertaining. Now, one thing I think we've spoken about being quiet on the water. Being quiet on the bank and not moving around, not making loud noises, is essential, especially if you're talking about catching a larger fish. Larger fish are large for a reason. So if people clunk around on the bank and they knock rocks around and they scream and yell, the larger fish is going to be that fish that has the sensitivity to such motions and noises. And the larger fish is going to be the one that's scared away by people. So my neighbors were so entertaining that I actually was distracted a few times and I had a massive tangle just based on the fact that I was enjoying listening to what, we'll call regular anglers about the different, misconceptions and the little fishing lore that's been passed on just from, dads or grandfathers and that, yelling instead of actually teaching. And they're, in fact, yelling the things that I speak about on the show and contradicting me out loud right next to me. Now, the funny thing was, we were the only ones on this pond. And the pond was probably, if you went all the way around it, it was probably only 200 yards around the entire pond. Okay? So there was plenty of space, though. And this whole family kind of kept scooching over closer and closer and closer until they were only 6 feet from me. So I was having a hoot because I was just listening to all these things coming out of their mouths that just, you know, makes me crazy. But there's things that we as Americans have somehow taken in as fishing gospel. When people think these, and when I play these clips, I know that the listening audience, that you will hear these clips, and these will be things that you have all heard to a person. So there you go. So look for that. I will start on that right away tonight so that I have all this ready to go and loaded up for next week. So we will get the wadding. We will prep the powder.
Ready?
We'll load it up.
Fire.
We will begin the revolution. This is the beginning. We'll begin it with next week's broadcast with American lore. So you won't need to go to Snopes or different sites to see if it's urban myth or not. I will bring the urban myth right to you. So we'll continue in our sequence about breaking down modern angling and how bad at fishing we truly are. Okay? I find myself making horrible mistakes and falling into the traps. I mean, I've been mistrained for so long. It's like living under British rule for so many years. You're gonna play harpsichord when you need to do a battle. And so there you go. We need something a little more powerful, right? So let's think about that. No fishing news this week. I had some cool stuff. I'll have some cool stuff for you next week for certain, and we'll take it to the break. One more quick break here before we wrap things up. Let's see what else we got. I've got some big stuff coming up this week. I've got I actually need some volunteers. In a couple weeks, I am helping out paralyzed veterans in a paralyzed veterans fishing derby, and that is happening in Elk Grove Village, Illinois. So if you do. If you're able to assist and you're in the Chicago area or, you know, you want to travel, by all means, I need all hands on deck. So any anglers out there, I'm going to be working the Paralyzed Veterans Fishing Derby on June 15th. And again, that's in Elk Grove Village. Please do give me a call or drop me an email at radio@chicagofishingschool.com if you're able to assist some great guys who have given it all for our country. So let's give back a little bit, a couple hours of helping them take some fish off the hook, etc. And let's take a break with on Blog Talk Radio or on iTunes. You can subscribe and get it downloaded to your inbox. And that's kind of cool because then when we have the showgram, it shows up right by you. So let's hear an oldie but goodie, and we'll wrap things up in just a second. I'll be right back.
Attention. No fishing. Catching no fish. No bites.
Built for tough fishing all around North America, where fishing can be very difficult. Catches can be small, slim, or none. New fishing tackle from Chicago Tackle Company, Bear Tackle Floats, built only for catching fish. See our new line of sensitive live bait tackle coming soon across North America online. Get ready to see the bites you have been missing. Get ready to catch.
Attention. New.
Visit ChicagoFishingSchool.com for a complete line of the 2012 Bear Tackle Sensitive Fishing Floats. That's ChicagoFishingSchool.com.
What did that guy say? Did he say 2010? We got to get some new sponsors. There you go. All right, so that's going to wrap it up. I think I am going to get out this weekend, and there isn't a local event. If you are in the Chicago area, we do have a fishing league that we're starting out. We talked about it. We talked big time. And a fishing league is essentially everybody get out at the water's edge. We take a little time to get set up, blow the whistle, and then we place anything we catch into a mesh bag. And this would be the sport of choice if George Washington were into fishing league. It would be what's called coarse fishing. And American coarse fishing or American match fishing is a really cool thing for us, you know, we as fishermen. Here's the cool part is that you can see your neighbor very close to you. So you can hear the splash of fish. You can hear reels when there's drag going, when there's big fish. And you can kind of get a pace via audio. You can get a pace as to what's being caught. So not even looking around the lake, you can hear the splishing and splashing. You can also look up, and it's kind of like a sports event where if you can listen to the audio of the crowd or the buzz, let's say it's a football game or a hockey game or baseball game, you would hear the buzz of the crowd. You would be able to get a sense for how it's going. Same thing with the fishing. You can kind of take a look around and see if people are up and standing around or what their body language is. You can see if they're intent and there's a lot of action and there's a lot of, intensity and focus straight ahead. Or are they looking around? Are they all over the place and they're kind of not paying attention and they're not into it? Well, then you know that the fishing is slow. So the methods that I talk about on the show are great for times when the fishing is very slow and very difficult. At those times, if you follow this and you pick up on some of the things I'm talking about, you will do better than anybody in those situations. So do think about it. I'm going to switch over to take you out of the can of the hot. But if you do follow these concepts and you change your gear and it looks you start to get rid of some of these old things, you'll have a lot more success. And so these matches, American match fishing, are really cool. And people fill these bags up, let's say for 3 or 4 hours, and they have these big mesh bags and fill them up with fish. And at the end, scale comes, thanks for that warning, scale comes right behind the spot. And then all the participants kind of crowd along and follow the path of the scale. You take the net out, and then everything that was caught in that spot, you go spot by spot. You can kind of measure fish populations across the lake, up and down the line. Or you can see that an angler did really well on a tough portion. Maybe in this batch of 10 anglers, only one in the center caught a ton of fish. Now, it might be the spot, but then again, it might be the technique and the bait and the attention that that angler has given. So I'm getting the old signal from the boot. And I believe that's Yankee Doodle playing. It is. So I'm going to sign off. And you'll think about the fact that somebody from 200 years ago could destroy you. So that's it for me. I'll see you next week, and we'll talk about modern fishing myths and how the misbelief of the angler can really destroy what you're doing. Talk about how people think they're doing the right thing. And in fact, it's not long. So I'm out of here. I will see you next time. 10 seconds to get the muscle. Let's try that in 10 seconds. I am done. Yeah.
Hey, Tom.
Here's Johnny.
Are you ready?